This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Futuro.
So it was around 2010. So I was about 9 going on 10 that I started getting really sick out of nowhere.
Nayeli Cobo is now 19, but she was just a kid when she moved with her mom to University Park, which is a neighborhood in South Los Angeles.
I got spontaneous nosebleeds extremely frequently. They were so intense that I couldn't sleep horizontally anymore. I had to sleep vertically so I wouldn't choke on my own blood.
She started getting body spasms to the point where she sometimes couldn't even walk. She started getting heart palpitations, stomach pain, and headaches.
Every day I had a different doctor's appointment. It was cardiologist, neurologist, gastroenterologist, and all these other specialists, and they never found what was wrong with me.
And I always pictured the worst I was, like, very scared.
That's Monique Uriarte, Nayeli's mom.
Thinking that she has brain tumor or she has heart problems. Sometimes I need to run to a doctor's office because her stomach pain is so intense.
And it wasn't just her. She'd hear other people in the neighborhood talk about similar things that were happening to them. One day, Nayeli and her sister were walking back home from yoga when they noticed a foul smell that reminded them of overripe, spoiled fruit.
And we were like, that's weird. Like, we've never smelled this before. So we were like, whatever. We just shook it off and went inside to our apartment, and the house was empty.
She says her mom opened the door of their bedroom and told her to go in.
And that's when my mom told us there's an oil well across the street.
Monique had recently come back from a community meeting with a toxicologist that said that their health problems were being caused by an oil well. An oil well in the middle of a residential neighborhood in South Los Angeles. In one of their next visits to the doctor, Nayeli's mom decided to bring up this new piece of information.
My mom told the doctor, oh, you know, we live next to an oil well. I don't know if that could have anything to do with this. And the doctor took off his glasses, he put them on top of his head and said, you need to move.
From Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And today we take you to Los Angeles, a city that sits on the largest urban oil field in the country. It's where one young Latina and her mom decide to take on the powerful oil industry. Producer Andres Caballero picks up the story from here.
Once you start looking for oil sites in LA, you start to notice them all over the place.
And so I just made this left onto Pico Boulevard.
In this case, I'm on the west side of town, and I'm looking at a beige 7-story structure disguised as an office building.
And there's this giant, let's see, 6 or 7 story building that has no windows. And it just hovers over the neighborhood. And this, I've been told, is the Packard drill site that is still active.
Inside this windowless building, there are no floors, just open space for an oil rig. It also has no roof so that toxins can escape easily.
So you can hear the birds and then sporadically this sort of mechanical noise coming from behind the big walls here.
This specific site has been active since the late 60s, and it still produces thousands of barrels every year.
I wonder how many people who live here actually know what happens inside this building.
About a 5-minute drive west, closer towards fancy Beverly Hills, is another, the Cardiff Tower drill site in the Pico Robertson neighborhood. This area became a Jewish enclave after World War II, and it's said the tower was built to resemble a synagogue. Its exterior is still well kept, painted yellow and white, and there are now 40 active wells beneath it.
And so I'm right here at the entrance to this other windowless tower, and there's a sign from the California Health and Safety Code that reads, "Detectable amounts of chemicals known to the state of California to cause cancer, birth defects, or other reproductive harm may be found in crude oil and other petroleum products and their vapors."
If you really take the time, you'll even find a drill site hidden inside the Beverly Hills Mall. You'll find four islands off the coast of Long Beach built to resemble a tropical world of fake waterfalls and palm trees that cover up more than 1,000 oil wells. That project was courtesy of the same company that helped build Disneyland. But the reality is that not all the drill sites in Los Angeles are this aesthetically pleasing, or guarded by four walls to redirect toxins away from residences.
For example, the site near where Nayeli lives. She's the 19-year-old we heard from before, the one with the nosebleeds and other symptoms. The site is so well hidden that the family lived across from it for a while without knowing it was active.
I followed Nayeli and Monique for a quick tour.
And that beautiful brick building.
This one right here?
Yes, on the corner.
From Nayeli's building, if you look less than 60 feet across the street, you'll see a big concrete wall partially covered by plants. And then there's a gate with some signs on it.
Y mira lo que está aquí. ¿Y qué dice el gate?
A yellow gate that says Allen Co. Energy Inc.
Allen Co. Energy bought the oil production facility about a year before Nayeli moved across the street. They're a smaller oil company with a few operations in Southern California.
Para que veas la diferencia y te la podemos explicar.
Sí, no hay problema.
Nayeli and Monique then take me a couple of floors up into a parking structure where you can get a clear look at the Allen Co. site from above.
How did you find this spot, by the way?
Oh, my mom found it. I don't know. Since we're at a high elevation, you get a better view of what's really behind these big walls. So there's pipes, tanks, all kinds of other weird-looking stuff. Underground, they have 21 wells.
But also you can see the blue pipes. They are the escapes for these fumes. And they are wide open to the community. I always, how close is from schools? And we have 9 schools right here.
Oil rigs in LA neighborhoods are nothing new. The beginning of oil production in Los Angeles goes way back to the 1870s, when oil was discovered there. Back then, the city only had a population of about 5,000. Before would-be actors flocked to Los Angeles, people came here with dreams of striking oil. You may remember the film There Will Be Blood, starring Daniel Day-Lewis. That took place just north of LA.
Ladies and gentlemen, if I say I'm an oil man, you will agree. I'm a family man.
By the 1890s, LA's population had grown tenfold. That's when a man named Edward L. Doheny sharpened a 60-foot eucalyptus log, which he then used to drill one of the city's first wells. That site today is known as Echo Park. By 1930, California produced almost a quarter of the world's oil. LA was basically that era's Saudi Arabia. If you look at the black and white photos of Los Angeles, Venice Beach, Long Beach, back in the 20s, 30s, and even 50s, you'll be shocked at the sea of oil rigs that once covered these parts of the city and its coasts. Now, most of the oil has already been extracted, but many operations are still going, and new drilling permits are still being handed out. In order to exploit what's left, oil companies have had to resort to more sophisticated extraction methods. And these methods release toxins known to cause health issues. In 2010, Allen Co. Energy, the oil company that had been operating in Nayeli's neighborhood when she and her mom moved in, started engaging in acidizing, a process similar to fracking, in which acids are used to dissolve rock and then free up oil deposits that are deep beneath the surface. After they started acidizing, production for Alinco Energy went up by 400%. But so did the number of neighbors complaining about their horrible smells, people with headaches, children with recurring nosebleeds. That was the same year that Nayeli moved to the neighborhood. Across the street from Alinco is Nayeli's building, which is owned by a nonprofit that offers affordable housing to low-income families here. Her mom actually works for the nonprofit.
That community feel that a lot of people experience in Latino cultures. If my mom needed a tomato, for example, I know I could go to her next door neighbor and we could get that.
My neighborhood is beautiful. The elotero man yelling, the lady selling tamales, kids from school running.
Monique came from Mexico decades ago, like most people, looking for better opportunities. Nayeli's dad was an immigrant as well, but the relationship eventually became abusive. She decided to leave and raise Nayeli as a single mom.
My mom had the strength and courage to leave my father, knowing it was like a really tough call to make. Like, I've always admired her for that, and she's like really my best friend.
Her mom was the kind of person that would never accept defeat. So after Nayeli got sick and the doctor told them to move, her reaction was to do the opposite, to stay and fight.
Because if I move, another family came and is getting sick again. I think that to shut down permanently, Alinco Energy is the solution.
So it all started with door-to-door knocking. Mom saying, hey, do you smell this? Do you know what's going on? Oh, it smells. Okay, go knock on so-and-so's door and I'll go down the block and tell these other families to call.
Nayeli and her mom started organizing neighbors to call the Southern California Air Quality Management District, which is a state agency in charge of dealing with air-related health complaints.
Okay, we did that. What else can we do? It was creating town hall meetings. It was finding out when we could go to city hall hearings.
All right, democracy is more than simply voting, but it is holding our elected officials accountable.
Eventually, they got the support of the nonprofit that runs the low-income housing unit they lived in. And they created a campaign called People Not Pozos, People Not Wells, to shut down the Alinco site.
The grassroots campaign in South Los Angeles really started because of the moms wanting to give their children the ability to clean air. And something my mom always says, which I like to point out, is that when she immigrated here from Mexico, she never thought she'd have to fight for our right to breathe clean air.
There are around 5,000 active wells in L.A. County and more than 800 within the L.A. city limits alone. And according to studies by advocacy groups, the majority of these active wells are near low-income, Black and Latino neighborhoods. After all, low-income families are less likely to have the resources to put up a fight to get rid of drilling in their neighborhoods. For many years, there was little oversight of oil operations in Los Angeles. In fact, the city's petroleum administrator position was left vacant for decades. Only a few years ago, partly in response to communities organizing, did the city finally fill the post. And even for the regulations that were in place, some seemed only to apply to wider, more affluent areas.
It was heartbreaking knowing that my life didn't matter as much as a little girl's in Beverly Hills, because she's not exposed to toxic emissions, but I am.
According to advocates, sites on the west side were regularly required to use electric rigs to help reduce diesel emissions and noise. But in South LA, where Nayeli lives, that rule seemed to not be enforced. And oil operations in wealthier areas also seemed to have more protections, like bigger or enclosed walls to reduce pollution.
Yet, when it was in the hood per se, with Black and brown people, immigrant people, they didn't care about us. It can be loud, whereas in Beverly Hills, there had to be silent machines, and we never got that.
Nayeli and her mom continued to organize, now with a group called Stand LA, until they finally got the attention of U.S. Senator Barbara Boxer, who flew down to L.A. and held a press conference. There, along with Nayeli and other activists, she called for Alinco Energy to cease all operations in the neighborhood. The attention prompted on-site inspections by state and federal agencies. Local papers reported that at least one EPA official got sick while inspecting the Alenco site. And in 2013, finally, what Nayeli and her mom started led to a victory for the neighborhood. Alenco Energy voluntarily halted its operations with pending investigations by several agencies.
And it's been years that they've been temporarily shut down.
They won another victory in 2015 after a lawsuit led to Alenco having to pay more than $1 million in penalties and to revamp their safety monitoring system before even being able to open again. I reached out to Alenco for comment, but they didn't return my messages. Nayeli and her mom, along with other advocacy groups, have now set their sights on a bigger target, closing down every well in Los Angeles. But the oil industry isn't going to take that fight lying down.
Coming up on Latino USA, we hear from a representative of the oil industry, and we look into how influential big oil really is in local politics. Stay with us, no te vayas.
Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is an all-in-one management software with apps for every business need. Odoo has apps for CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, manufacturing, and everything in between, and they're all in one easy-to-use software. And the best part about Odoo? All Odoo apps are integrated, helping you get things done faster and more efficiently. So when you think about business, think Odoo. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, we're back. When we left off, anti-oil advocates had won in a fight to shut down oil wells in a residential neighborhood in South Los Angeles. Now, we're going to hear why going up against the oil industry isn't so easy. Andres Caballero is going to pick it up from here.
For Nayeli and her mom, shutting down a few oil wells across the street from where they live is one thing, but they had a much bigger goal in mind. I met up with them at a rally at LA City Hall, where more than 100 people gathered and listened to Nayeli speak.
So that's why we're here at City Hall asking our politicians that work for us, because we put them in those seats and we can just as easily take them out.
So we are on the south lawn of Los Angeles City Hall, and we are having a rally on behalf of Stand LA, so we can tell LA City Council members to vote yes on the 2,500-foot health and safety buffer zone.
The 2,500-foot buffer zone. The idea is to create a law at either city or state level that mandates a half-mile buffer zone between drill sites and places like schools, residences, playgrounds, or hospitals. About 900,000 people in California live within a half mile of an active oil or gas well. This is according to the Environmental Defense Fund. But a challenge to passing a law like this is that to do so, you have to go up against the oil industry. And I happened to get an opportunity to speak with a representative of the oil industry myself.
In the LA Basin, if you draw a half-mile radius circles around all production, you would end all production.
That's Rock Zierman. He's the CEO of the California Independent Petroleum Association. When you think of oil companies, you probably imagine giant corporations. But many of the companies drilling in LA are actually small. Some even family-run operations. Zierman represents about 400 of these independent oil and gas producers. He argues that the buffer zone that Nayeli and her mom want to see is short-sighted.
It would definitely shut down nearly all oil and gas production in Los Angeles, and those lost barrels would simply have to be imported from foreign countries, primarily Saudi Arabia. Obviously, in California, we operate under the strictest environmental rules and regulations in the world. And if we were to outsource our oil and import it from the Middle East, we would simply be trading our strict environmental rules for their very loose environmental rules, and that would harm the environment.
But then there's a more pressing issue, which is what got community advocates to mobilize in the first place: the impact oil drilling is having on people's health. In 2018, a report released by the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health affirmed that oil and gas operations close to residential neighborhoods is a major risk factor. But Zierman says that studies like these are not backed by proper scientific research.
Most of the agencies that actually use scientific methods to go evaluate our operations find that our operations are safe. But a lot of these, for instance, will just plot where people live, and then they'll say oil and gas may be near, and so whatever problems there are, they'll attribute it to oil and gas operations and discount the fact that they're near highways, they're near the port, they're near all kinds of sources of pollution.
This is an argument you hear from the industry side a lot, that health complaints are exaggerated or unconfirmed, and that there's still no actual proof directly linking oil operations to people's health problems. I reached out to the South Coast Air Quality Management District. That's the state agency that monitors air quality, which also helped investigate Allen Co. They do say that many health complaints may be related to proximity to highways and exposure to traffic pollution. But they shared an interesting piece of data with me that suggests that an active drill site can make air pollution worse. They took air quality data before and after Allen Co stopped drilling in Nayeli's neighborhood. And they found a big improvement in air quality after they stopped. A nearly 40% drop in methane. I asked Zierman how he can say that oil drilling isn't affecting people's health when sites like Allen Co are being shut down for violations.
I mean, the fact that Allen Co Energy, for example, had operations halted, you know, by a judge, was ordered to pay a fine, is that an indication of something?
Obviously, there are going to be some instances for any industry where you may have one or two examples of issues. If you're not compliant with rules and regulations, the city and the Division of Oil and Gas and the Water and Air Districts absolutely should take action.
Is there an actual difference in how companies are behaving or abiding by regulations in wealthier areas compared to less wealthy ones?
None whatsoever. We operate in Beverly Hills, where there's oil production surrounded by multi-million dollar homes. We produce where the oil is. So we don't get to choose where our facilities are located. They're located where the oil is, underground. And historically, they were there first, and the community built up around those oil facilities.
Zierman says that he's concerned that if more regulations are passed for the industry as a whole, jobs would also be lost.
Now you have people in Los Angeles that have high-paying jobs that are going to lose their jobs.
Zierman's organization connected me with the California Resources Corporation, where Mayra Castro works as a well analyst.
Both of my parents, you know, born in Mexico, came out here. My dad had two jobs. My mom worked at a hotel, cleaned houses on the weekends just to make ends meet.
She also thinks that there's a lot of misinformation in communities linking oil drilling to health hazards. And she's afraid that if any buffer zone law were passed, her company would have to shut down.
Because we are so close to so many homes. If you're in this industry and you see something like that, you definitely have that in the back of your mind every day you come to work, that I won't have a good career to provide for my kids.
This is the type of scenario where the government is caught up between the interests of communities who say their health will be better without oil production, and those like Maida, whose livelihoods depend on oil production. If the buffer zone law is passed in LA, or at a state level, it would be a major blow for the oil industry. But one of the reasons it's hard to get bills like that through the legislature is that the oil industry has a lot of political muscle, even in ultra-green California. In 2017 and 2018, the Western States Petroleum Association, which is the industry's main lobby group, spent nearly $16 million to persuade legislators to vote for their interests. A year before that, a group called the Coalition to Restore California's Middle Class, basically a kind of super PAC, spent about $2 million on 8 candidates. 6 of those candidates were Latino and Black Democrats. That same oil coalition poured a ton of money into recently elected California Senator Lina Gonzalez. She's a Latina Democrat, and she represents Senate District 33, which includes Long Beach, also partly in Los Angeles County, and just 20 miles south of Nayeli's neighborhood. A big concentration of active oil wells are in her district. Formerly, she was on the Long Beach City Council.
According to campaign records, the oil coalition spent more than $1 million to promote her campaign, more than on any other candidate at the time. Most of it going to billboards and TV ads.
Without blue-collar workers, coffee wouldn't get here. Lina Gonzalez respects what blue-collar couples do.
I called Senator Gonzalez to see how she felt about all this. She said she was surprised when she first found out that the oil industry was actually supporting her.
I was getting, you know, calls from my family members, hey, you're on TV, and hey, I see your billboards, and I was like so confused. You know, a lot of people were mad at me because they were like, you took money from Chevron and you took money from Valero.
Senator Gonzalez says she had no choice whether to accept the money or not. And that's true. By law, the money didn't even pass through her hands. The oil companies can choose to spend it on whomever they like. But it still raises questions about her relationship with the industry and the expectations or pressures that might follow. Senator Gonzalez, again, is a Democrat. She has a progressive platform and has even been endorsed by some environmental groups. On her campaign website, she brings up her record on green issues, cleaning up the LA River and fighting against styrofoam.
And what I don't understand is, you know, why refineries want to continue to expand, pollute our neighborhoods. The state of California has very tough goals and emissions, but yet, you know, these refineries have so many, you know, opportunities to expand, to continue to operate. And it just doesn't make any sense to me. So I hope that I will be able to put my foot down, be a strong voice for my community, especially communities of color.
I asked her, considering her stance on drilling, why she thought the oil coalition chose to spend their money on her campaign.
I'm not the oil industry. I have no idea, but I can only speculate. They pick and they target people that they know that are going to win.
In other words, the oil industry bets and puts money on front runners with the hope that maybe it buys them some influence down the line. I asked Rock Zierman, the head of the California Independent Petroleum Association you heard from earlier, why he thinks the oil coalition chose to fund Senator Gonzalez's campaign.
Well, the city of Long Beach is an oil company. A lot of the money that they have in their budget comes from the oil that is produced there. And so I think the councilwoman in her tenure on the city council has become acquainted with our operations and the fact that they're safe. And so I think there was a confidence there that the councilwoman would come to Sacramento with the necessary knowledge to make sound decisions.
After relentless lobbying by the oil industry, the bill that would help create the 2,500-foot buffer zone stalled at the state assembly. As for Nayeli and her mom, even though they pledged to stay and fight, they eventually moved out of University Park to another part of LA.
I'm constantly in that neighborhood, and even though I don't sleep there anymore, it's always going to be my community.
She's still pushing for the buffer zone law as an activist, taking part in various campaigns to raise awareness about the dangers of drilling.
Do you think the oil companies are afraid of you?
They better be. No. I feel like they don't see me as much of a threat. That's just a little girl who's fighting and this and that, like she won't get anywhere. But I know that isn't true, and they'll just have to find that out on their own. I always think of the story of David and Goliath, this little boy going against a monster, and that little boy is the person who won that fight, and that's how this fight is going to end too.
It may not be easy, and it may take time, but Nayeli believes this fight will end with no little girls having to risk the consequences of living across the street from an oil site, like she once did.
Our thanks to Andres Caballero for that story, which aired originally in June of 2019. And we have a couple of updates for you. This past August, Bill AB 345, the bill that would have helped to create that 2,500 feet buffer zone, narrowly failed to pass in the California State Senate. California is still one of the only oil-producing states without a safety buffer zone between oil production and schools, hospitals, and people's homes. As for Nayeli, she was diagnosed with a rare and aggressive cancer last year. She's now recovering after multiple surgeries, chemotherapy, and radiation sessions. And she's already thinking of making a comeback soon in the fight against big oil. This episode was reported by Andres Caballero and edited by Marlon Bishop. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Andrea Lopez Cruzado, Julieta Martinelli, Alisa Escarce, Ginny Montalvo, Alejandra Salazar, Reinaldo Leaños Jr., and Julia Rocha, with help from Marta Martinez and Raul Perez. Fact-checking for this episode by Amy Tardiff. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, and Leah Shaw, with help from Elishiba Itub. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, I'll see you on all of our social media. Ahí los veo. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by California Endowment, building a strong state by improving the health of all Californians. The New York Women's Foundation, funding women leaders that build solutions in their communities and celebrating 30 years of radical generosity. And funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
I'm Maria Hinojosa, and next time on Latino USA, a portrait of Gabby Rivera. She's a novelist and a comic book writer penning for Marvel's superhero, America Chavez. That's next time on Latino USA.